Welcome to The Elusive Truth with Rich and Larry. On today's show, we're going to be talking about truck drivers. We're going to be talking about our border and somehow formulas tied into that as well, as you'll hear. And of course, we're going to hear from our newest press secretary that has replaced our wonderful Jen Psaki. All right, so here we go. This is how truck driving became the worst job in the world. Insider News, April 22nd, 2022. Have a listen.
Truck drivers from all over the U.S. are exhausted, underpaid, and frustrated.
Long durations, long miles throughout the day to get stuff where it needs to be.
The trucks are the backbone of the country. If we stop, everybody knows this country stopped.
Hundreds showed up for this convoy protesting COVID-19 restrictions in February.
I wanted to be in the first wave, make sure that we were making the big statement.
But much of what plagues the industry started long before the pandemic. So why are drivers in the U.S. so frustrated? And how did we get here? Truck driving used to be one of the best blue-collar jobs around. It was a golden ticket to the middle class. A strong union fought for high wages and good working conditions, but it didn't last.
The troubles that truck drivers have today really began in 1980 with deregulation.
That's when a new law called the Motor Carrier Act got rid of the fixed rates truckers used to charge.
Trucking industry has probably changed so much over the last 10, 15, 20 years. It is something that doesn't get recognized as much as it should.
Chris Barnes has worked as an independent contractor since May 2021.
Internationally, you want to sneak up in front?
He was frustrated with COVID restrictions at the U.S.-Canada border that made his job much harder. So he drove nearly 1,000 miles from Tacoma, Washington, to join the convoy in Adelanto, California. The plan was to drive cross-country and reach the capital. He's traveling with his daughter and his dog.
I think Taco is feeling it the most because, you know, small quarters, and he's getting to the point where he's letting you know he doesn't like you getting in his area.
Like most drivers, he owns his big rig. It cost him $23,000. He also has to pay for gas and repairs.
Yeah, I've got an older truck, but I'm a gearhead, so it's something that I can keep moving down the road till I get to the truck I want.
Chris spends $8,000 on these expenses every month. He has to drive at least 2,500 miles to break even.
I'd like to get some full fenders on my drive axle. Hey, that'll be one day, you know.
That's part of why critics of the industry have taken to calling trucks like these sweatshops on wheels. It's where drivers live for up to 20 days at a time. And they often work around the clock, hours that match up to two full-time jobs.
We're not out here to make, you know, get rich. It's out here to make a living and do what we can. That's pretty much what we're here for.
Chris even does his laundry on the go.
Basically, got a week's worth of laundry to catch up on, sheets and pillowcases and all that, try to get ready for the day.
The average salary for the industry is about $50,000 a year. With their long hours, that means many drivers are working for less than minimum wage. And for the last decade, truck drivers' jobs have gotten even harder.
I was built out over a long time, and now it's so convenient for somebody to order something, get it at their doorstep.
And so much free or fast shipping means a lot of traffic. The shipping crisis has created even bigger delays.
We don't have trucks, we don't have food, we don't have product. If we can't move it, we can't sell it, we can't sell it, we can't make money. So it's very important that we got trucks.
Lines stretched for 5 miles outside a port in California last October as drivers waited to get into terminals. No one's paying for that lost time.
Two-thirds of the day, that driver is out there waiting to work, doing unpaid work, living out of the truck. I mean, it's an incredibly inefficient system.
There's always stories about somebody that'll be sitting at place for 5-6 hours just before they get even checked in.
We're talking another solid hour or two.
The trucking industry is dominated by a few big companies.
They will get drivers to sign a contract that says, we'll train you for free, but you have to work for us for a year. And once drivers are in that situation, of course, they can't leave the job for higher wages, and so they end up accepting subpar wages.
Vasali says most new drivers quit after about 6 months, although that often means they'll pay tons of fees.
It's effectively a system of debt peonage.
Even before the pandemic, more than 90% of truck drivers were leaving the industry each year. But new workers take their spots.
It's just cheaper to bring in a new driver than it is to try to hire and retain an experienced safe driver.
The truck drivers who joined the Freedom Convoy say they felt forgotten, even though they're keeping America running.
Most people don't realize how hardworking it is, how big a job it is. I've done it from one end to the other.
At the start of the pandemic, U.S. truck drivers were celebrated as frontline workers. But by the time they watched Canadian truckers occupy Ottawa, the same old frustrations were back.
A lot of recognition initially when COVID hit about how important trucks were. And now people are saying that trucks aren't necessarily that important and that we're the problem.
When a group from California decided to organize an American convoy, they led the charge by railing against COVID-19 restrictions, even though most of those rules had already been lifted. The protest still resonated with folks across the country.
Thank you! Thank you! Yeah!
We're here to witness and support the truckers, the people who are in the convoy.
Love these people. Really do. They're my inspiration.
They gave out food to the truckers at rest stops and packed these rallies to show their support.
It is time to remind the governments around the world that they work for
The line of trucks stretched for miles at some points.
Today we decided that we're going to go onto the Beltway.
But when the convoy got close to Washington, D.C., it didn't make the impact they wanted. The National Guard deployed 700 members to control traffic in the Capitol. And rally organizers told drivers to stay out to avoid arrests.
It is very important that we do not get off the exit that we're not supposed to be getting off of.
I'm good with not driving in. I'd like to stay here until we actually accomplish something concrete.
Truckers drove around D.C. in circles instead. But the movement fizzled out in about a week.
This is a small portion. I hope that we, achieve everything that we need to.
Still, Chris says he doesn't regret joining the protest, even if it was ignored like many of the issues truck drivers face. He says the support was about much more than mask and vaccine mandates.
When people start seeing trucks on the road, it's something that they can connect with. And brothers and sisters that are actually running these trucks, they know that they're on the front line also.
I know this was a highly produced piece. I wanted to show you another side of the story, since we all have been led to believe that the shortages are caused by the ports, not enough dock workers, the truck drivers are in misery like everybody else, high fuel costs. That's the number one killer right now. Think about it. Everything is going up based on that. One piece that they touched on was the high cost of trucks in general. You can sell your used truck for $20,000 more than you paid for it. So with the high gas prices or diesel prices, a lot of people are getting out of the trucking industry, or it's the people that have huge payments still left on their rig or that are feeling the biggest crunch with the jobs. And it's just a total mess. We'll get it straightened out. But just another viewpoint I wanted to point out. That this is way more screwy than we think. It's like the perfect storm. More to come. For our next piece, this is brought to us by Fox Business. It's called Caught on Camera, GOP Rep Rips Biden Administration After Exposing Formula Stockpiles at the Border. Most of you probably don't know, but formula is hard to get. There was a big FDA closure of a plant, and that's another. We'll get into that. That's our last piece. Apparently, Biden is so grateful for our immigrants that he's stockpiling formula for all the people trying to get into the country. But, forget about the people that live here and pay the taxes and have to deal with the inequities that this administration has been giving us. Once again, have a listen.
Right now is the Florida Congresswoman herself who exposed this at the border. Kat Kamak is here. She's a member of the Homeland Security and Agricultural Committees. Congresswoman, thanks very much for being here. I know Congress is set to take the issue up this week, but tell us what you saw and react to what you just heard from Buttigieg.
Well, good morning, Maria. And, you know, yesterday I was on the border myself, and the facts on the ground are exactly how we have been stating them. You know, last week I received text messages and photos from Border Patrol agents showing a stockpile of baby formula, and there was complete outrage from the White House and CNN and other liberal outlets claiming that we were lying. So I decided to go down myself and film it. And lo and behold, not only was there stocked warehouses, but there were multiple stocked warehouses that have been not only filled with baby formula and diapers and wipes and clothing, but they have been doing this for months, and there's more en route. And this just points again to how out of touch this administration is, and they could stop this with a simple policy change. And to the Secretary of Transportation's remarks that they have been on top of this from day one, that is a lie. They canceled 43% of this manufacturer's production with no plan to backfill that market share that they make up. So how have they been on top of this? Because moms for months have been saying it was getting harder and harder to find formula. This is just another example of the broken administration that doesn't know how to govern.
So how did this happen, Congresswoman? I know that the FDA investigated one plant. I mean, had they known that there were issues months ago, why wasn't more done to fix it? How did we get here?
You know, that's the million-dollar question right now. See, back in fall of last year, there was a whistleblower who alerted the FDA to some bacteria issues within the Abbott facility in Lansing, Michigan. There was a thorough investigation, a voluntary recall by Abbott, and it was in March that the FDA themselves, they came out with a public statement saying that the bacteria found in the Lansing facility did not match the bacteria that tragically killed those two infants that when there was an autopsy performed. So there was no connection between the two. So there was a voluntary recall. The Abbott facility has complied and done everything that they have been asked of the FDA, but yet there's no word from the FDA on when this facility can get back up and manufacture. Keep in mind, they manufacture 43% of the market share. And in the meantime, there's been no easing of regulations. There has been no easing of the tariffs to import baby formula. It has been radio silence. But that's how this administration operates. They want us to flounder because they have no solutions. And they continually point the blame at everyone else but themselves.
You know, it's interesting because last week, Jen Psaki actually suggested that it was all Abbott's fault. Abbott had to come out tweeting about it, saying the White House is misrepresenting it. This is not Abbott's fault. We all know this. What you just laid out was exactly right, that we see that it, in fact, did not come from Abbott. But I want to get your take on what else is going on at the border. You were just there. A federal judge is expected to rule on Title 42 within days. Two dozen GOP states have already filed a lawsuit to try to block the administration from lifting Title 42. Congressman, what are you expecting? Do you think that Title 42 goes away on May 23rd, which was the date that the administration said it would overturn it?
You know, Maria, and you are so passionate and you've been so spot on in covering the border crisis from day one. When I was with the agents yesterday walking through these processing facilities, they talked in depth about the sheer number of people that they would be dealing with, up to 18,000 a day. Keep in mind, we lose operational control of the border at 3,000 a day. And what we're seeing currently is already untenable. If we lose Title 42, that is the last tool in the toolbox for these Border Patrol agents. These are the same people who can't find formula for their own kids in a Target down the street. I know because I went to that Target yesterday. But this is the thing. We will absolutely see an invasion at our southwest border. There has already been a lowering of vetting standards. People are being put through the processing process in a rapid manner in which they're not being properly vetted. The Democrats actually voted last week to accept arrest warrant paperwork as proof of ID for people to get into our country. There's ankle bracelets being cut off. this is going to absolutely have dire consequences for Americans, because what we're seeing are people on the international terrorist watch list coming across the border, narcotics pouring across the border. We will need to have some very tough policies on the books, but this administration is weak, and we know that.
Yeah. Well, we've already heard actually stories from border agents that MS-13 actors were actually apprehended at the border. So you're spot on.
Yes.
Congressman, thank you. Thanks for your leadership here. Kat Kamak joining us this morning on the border.
This certainly has to prove that the Biden administration is up to no good. The border is still an issue and it's getting worse. And coming up on the 23rd, hopefully this is resolved and these judges can keep this in place. There's going to be an onslaught of people coming into this country. Next, along the same lines, we have a new press secretary. Well, I'm sorry to say, can't say she's just as bad as Psaki yet, but boy, she's long-winded. Round and round we go without answering anything. So have a listen. This is her first day, and this was some questions about the baby formula problem.
You guys all deserve rewards. How about that? Go ahead, Nancy. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, MJ. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
On a separate topic, the president told my colleague Jeremy Diamond on Friday, when he asked if the administration should have acted sooner on baby formula shortage, if we'd been better mind readers, I guess we could have. This doesn't seem like a situation that would have required mind reading. As you know, the recall date back to February. I believe Politico reported months ago that the FDA was first warned about the suspected bacteria issue as early as September. Are there any specific actions that this administration took, meetings, phone calls, briefings in February or any earlier to begin addressing this potential shortage?
I mean, you've heard us talk about this. You've seen my colleagues on your networks talking about what we have done since February. We've been working around on this 24/7. But I do want to give you a little bit of an update of where we are. So getting more safe and fit formula onto shelves across the country is one of the president's top priorities, right? This is something that he is focusing on very acutely. And again, I said 24/7, we have been working on this since we learned about this back in February. It's important to remember this shortage exists because Abbott closed the facility, because of safety concerns from the FDA. The FDA is working closely with Abbott to bring the facility back online safely. That's the key here, safely. We want to make sure that this is done in a safe way. We are very close to having a path forward to safely reopening the facility. You can expect an announcement from FDA later today on that will go into more details. We're also moving as quickly as possible to safely bring in additional product from other countries as soon as today as well. We will be able to make an announcement on the expedited process to bring additional safe conduct product to the American store shelves. And throughout the weekend, we've been working closely with manufacturers and retailers to identify transportation and logistical needs to increase the amount and spread of FDA-approved formula being shipped into the country and ensure that formula is quickly moving from factories to retailers. The president understands. He gets this. He gets how stressful it is for parents trying to feed their children, which is why we're leaving no stone unturned to make more safe formula available. If parents need help finding formula, I encourage them to consult their pediatrician or visit hhs.gov/formula. But we have been working on this from February. Our administration has been.
Curious whether there are specific meetings, briefings, you know, phone calls that you could point us to.
I don't have anything specific for you to point to. I'm happy to go back and get that, you know, make sure that we are fully transparent on what we've been doing. But this has been this is an important top priority for the president. His team has been working overtime to make sure that we get formula back on the shelves, and we want to do this in a safe way. And again, we cannot forget how we got here. Abbott closed the facility because of safety concerns from the FDA. The FDA wanted to make sure that formula was going out in a safe way, and that is the job of the FDA, and that is the job of this administration as well.
And just very quickly on Abbott, Secretary Becerra said today, in terms of when things would be back to normal, that Abbott is the one that can tell you the timeline. We don't run their plants. Do you know if anyone from the federal government is currently at the plant or has visited the plant to get a sense of where things stand?
I don't have any information about if anyone's on the plant. I can go back to our team and figure that out more specifically, but there are a lot of dates floating around out there. But at the end of the day, the infant formula market is tight because the Michigan Abbott facility is offline currently, which is what we're trying to do. This is the announcement that you guys will hear from FDA later today on how we're helping them to do that. We're taking a range of steps to get more supply onto shelves from domestic and international locations and offering a suite of resources to move supply onto the market. As the Secretary said, Abbott can't speak on it to an exact timeline for reopening, but FDA is and will be prepared to effectively and quickly certify moving out safe products onto shelf as it is obligated to. And so that is going to be our focus. FDA is going to work closely with Abbott and make sure that we get them running again.
Good announcement. Thanks, Bryn. Congratulations.
Thank you.
When you talk about importing more product imminently, what is the criteria going to be for which formula can be imported? Will the administration allow formula that was not produced in FDA-approved factories overseas to be imported, or European brands, for example, that aren't currently sold in the U.S.?
Okay. So, as Dr. Califf was on various networks today, the FDA have said that it will release guidance as soon as today on how major formula manufacturers can bring in product that is not currently being produced for the U.S. market, as you're alluding to there, Nancy, and to your question. Companies will need to apply with the FDA, and FDA is prepared to review applications quickly and respond to them rapidly. FDA will prioritize review of applications that are most likely to be successful and will get the most formula to U.S. shelves as quickly as possible. All companies will meet the FDA's gold standard for quality control, and only safe products will come to America's shelves, as the FDA commissioner said and explained in detail this morning. At the White House, our role, what we'll be doing is we have alerted embassies, retailers, and manufacturers to identify potential companies that would make use of the new FDA importation process. Once FDA has finalized its rules, we will be ready to provide information to the public on using the new system quickly and safely and bring new supply to the market.
And New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand says the president should be invoking the Defense Production Act to increase supply more quickly. Is the president still considering that? And if not, why not?
I mean, we're pretty much where we were before on the DPA. We're leaving no stone unturned, and every option is on the table, as we have been saying for the past several days. I have no update on the DPA and where we are, but what we're taking action is to make more supplies available as soon as possible, as you've been hearing me say. That is our priority, our main goal. That's happening by increasing imports, as I just laid out, how we're going to do that process, and working closely with manufacturers to help them quickly ramp up production. And so that's going to be our focus.
And then finally, when you say that you're offering these retailers and producers more assistance, what kind of assistance are you talking about? What kind of assistance can the White House or the administration provide to get supply to store shelves more quickly?
Yeah, we're talking about logistical needs and any technical help is what we were talking about. But since the president calls on Thursday to manufacturers and retailers, which we read out, the White House has been in close communication to follow up on those conversations. The White House is having ongoing conversations with the four major infant formula to work with them to identify transportation, logistical, and supplier hurdles to increasing production of formula at their U.S. and FDA-approved facilities to expand the amount and speed of FDA-approved formula being shipped into the country and ensure that formula is quickly moving to retailers from factories. We are also in ongoing communications as we talk about retailers here as well with Target and Amazon and Walmart and other leading retailers for baby formula to identify parts of the country that may be at risk of critically low supply of infant formula and have offered to work with manufacturers and retailers to bring more formula to those parts of the country, including the U.S. government transportation and logistical support. Last, we are also contacting suppliers to infant formula manufacturers to inform them that their materials are critical for boosting U.S. infant formula production, and they should prioritize their production and delivery. So essentially, in short, we want them to know we're standing ready to provide the resources or support needed to move safely to get this to the shelves as soon as possible.
My take on this is that since February, working overtime, we're still working on a plan to get it to the shelves as soon as possible. And she said that all within 7 minutes, and I just told you here in 15 seconds. Well, that's our government. That's the Ed Biden administration. Oh, well, life will go on in this crazy circus world. I want to thank you for joining us and letting you know that Larry will be with us next week. He will call in. He does have a lot to say. Oh, my goodness. So God bless everybody. Take care. Keep looking for the elusive truth, and we will see you soon. Bye-bye.